something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Welcome to Youth Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people. It airs on the first Sunday of each month from 3 to 4 p.m. and is hosted by young people in Mendocino County. We want to create a place where young people can talk truthfully about important issues in our lives and have a dialogue with the community of listeners. Today's hosts are me, Mitzi Pearson, and
Caitlin Wiley,
and Paige Polson.
We are students at Laytonville High School. Today we have two topics, the Veterans History Project and cutbacks in family planning services for teens. We will spend around 30 minutes discussing each topic, including your calls, so please be ready to call when we give out the numbers. Laytonville High School, along with Anderson Valley High, took part in the Veterans History Project this spring. In 2000, the United States Congress created this project to preserve the remembrances of American war veterans and the civilian workers who supported them. These collections of firsthand accounts are archived in the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress for research and inspiration. The project compiles recollections of veterans who served in World War I, World War II, the Cold War, Korean War, Vietnam War, Persian Gulf War, as well as the Afghanistan and Iraq conflicts. Laytonville High School was invited to contribute to the project by Congressman Mike Thompson. 30 of our students interviewed 20 area veterans. All of this material was sent to the Library of Congress. Heading the project at Laytonville High was English teacher Rick Kale, along with Lindsay O'Neill from Healthy Start. Our media specialist Chris Shelton produced two DVDs of selections from the interviews, which is where we got the audio that we will play for you in a few minutes. Both the students and the veterans found the project educational, emotional, and a valuable communication across generations. The three audio clips that we will play for you are all from Vietnam veterans. It is good for young people to listen to the experiences of community members who have experienced being in war. These veterans talked about the lessons they learned from their service, as well as the after effects that still persist. Memorial Day was celebrated last week. The holiday was first observed as Decoration Day in 1865 to remember the fallen Union soldiers of the Civil War. Over time, the holiday has become Memorial Day, a day of remembering the men and women who died while serving in the United States Armed Forces. Fortunately for our community, the three Vietnam veterans that we will hear survived the war. We thank them for letting us hear their stories. We will begin with Tom Evans, who was interviewed by Paige Polson and Shanna Maxwell. Tom served in the Army, working in aircraft and flying combat missions.
How old were you when you went to war?
20.
20?
Mm-hmm. And were you scared?
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
What were you scared of?
Dying. Mm-hmm. Whatever, you know. You know, when you're that age, you got everything in front of you, and you think you're indestructible. And it just ain't that way. And my experience had all been from war movies about World War II and Korea. So you're watching it on, you know, it's just not real. But in our mind, we make it real. And the reality of it is you spend 99.9% of your time bored, stiff, but extremely scared, because you never know what's going to happen. You just never know. So being on edge like that kind of takes a toll, you know, stress. So that's been my experience. Every day, every night, it's there, and it never goes away. There's a song, I can't remember the artist. Excuse me. And I'm really not even sure of the title of the song, but it's about a Vietnam vet that came back and was dealing with the demons. And his statement in the song is that nobody should have the visions in their head that I do. Nobody. We that's not what humanity is about. But we decide to go the opposite direction.
So when you say demons, do you mean just the images that he had seen?
No, I think the demons are more the conflict that goes on inside of me all the time about what I did, my actions. And as I look back on it now, I think, God, that was disgusting. They would send out inspection teams to look at these aircraft and make a decision. Are they going to go for repair to Japan, where Bell Helicopter and the military, the Army, had a big repair facility, or are they going to go back to continental United States, to Corpus Christi, Texas, or Pensacola, Florida, depending on the amount of damage done to the aircraft, to be rebuilt and then reassigned. Our original assignment was to facilitate the transportation of these inspection teams. So we were assigned to the Army Material Command at Cameron Bay. And supposedly, we were just going to go out and fly around these teams. The military was always, always short of everything. So if we were not assigned to go look at specific aircraft, then we were an available aircraft if they needed to fill in some other mission, then we could be taken. So pretty much we spent most of our time flying combat assaults or combat support. They call it the fog of war, when all this stuff goes on and you kind of go on automatic and don't really understand. And I kind of think that sort of applies. You have your training, you know what you need to do, and if you're quick, you know instinctively what to do if the situation is beyond the scope of your training. We called it field expediency, knowing how to get your ass out of a situation that's really not in the book. Mm-hmm. You have to kind of go on instincts. Your experience and your instincts. And especially in aviation at that time, there was a whole lot of that.
That was Tom Evans speaking about his experiences in Vietnam. Paige, what did you learn and feel from interviewing Tom?
Well, when I interviewed Tom, just being able to talk to him in person was an amazing experience. He has a lot of knowledge, and he taught Shana and I both a lot. One thing that I took from interviewing him was the satisfaction of life and how much of a gift it is. Being able to talk to somebody who has had their life in jeopardy and been at the point of almost dying and having to hear about that, it's really sad, but it really makes you appreciate the life that you live and the fact that we as young adults get to make our own decisions and we don't have somebody or something like the military telling us what we have to do every second of the day. So that's something that we should cherish.
Next, we'll hear a part of the interview with Terry Wilcox, who served in Vietnam as a medic in the U.S. Air Force. Brett Harwood and I conducted this interview.
So how did you adapt to the Air Force life after, growing up as a civilian, going to high school, straight out of high school, you?
Adaptation wasn't that difficult. It was more a mindset than anything else. And I understood the mindset after a while, after about 3 months. And so by the time I left Lackland, I was sort of, I guess as much as possible, I was in harmony with the way the Air Force did things. I think I adjusted fairly well at that point. I was doing okay. I felt I was doing what they wanted, so that was all good.
What kind of relationships did you create when you were in the Air Force?
Some very good ones. some of the people I worked with, some of the other medics, nurses, even some of the people that I went to medical school with, basic med, it was called, at Greenville, Mississippi. Good relationships, pretty much. There wasn't, in my experience, there wasn't time to dwell on negative aspects in relationships. And most of what I ended up doing as a medic, I learned by doing in what they call the OJT, on-the-job training. We pretty much worked alone on that shift. There was one more medic, but we each worked individually because there were so many casts that needed to be cut and medications that needed to be given, and, you know, getting the guys ready so that they could sleep for a little while. That was the first place they'd been in a bed since they came to Vietnam. They were always on the ground in my facility because they were wounded again. Typically, a Lance Corporal that was 19 years old was the point man, and he was the one that hit the booby trap, because he was usually at least 100 yards ahead of the main group. So he's out there by himself, and whatever there was out there, he would run into it first. And the other guys would be a little safer. Not a whole lot, but some. So typically, that's the guy that I took care of, was that Lance Corporal, 19. He was always a little bit older and a little bit more experienced than everybody else in the unit. But there's certain things that, you know, nothing can help, you know. So yeah, it was a regular thing. That was the most common way of getting wounded in Vietnam. What we used to call the enemy did not want to kill us. They wanted to maim as many people as they could so that energy and expenses and manpower would have to be spent on all this work that we did, which I was part of.
That was Terry Wilcox. Mitzi, what stands out in your mind after hearing that interview with Terry Wilcox?
Well, after hearing him talk about his experience, we learned that every single veteran has to live with what they saw in the war or what they went through and what their friends went through. And that's so hard not to be negatively affected by all that. And they just, the rest of their lives, they have to live with the fact that they either killed someone or they saw someone being killed. And it's just, it's so hard to live through that and not be like wounded for life or like scarred.
Does that make you appreciate life more?
Yeah, it definitely made me think about how teenagers right now have it so easy, and you should really appreciate how easy your life is before you have to, like, go out in the world and either get drafted or do other things.
Yeah, have it taken away from you in a split second.
Mm-hmm. Next, we will hear part of the interview with William Womack, who served as a sergeant in the U.S. Army in Vietnam. William was interviewed by Caitlin Whiteley and Casey Notaro.
The hardest part was coming back home, and the treatment we received from the American citizens was by far, that was harder than the war. Well, when you're 18 years old and in the Army, you know, you're still like a high school student in a lot of ways. But you learn very fast, and the drill instructors help you learn very fast that you have to get along, and that petty differences aren't acceptable in the military. If you don't get along, you can't fight, and if there's no unit cohesion, you'll get beat.
What went through your mind, like, before, during, and after combat?
Well, you know, it's a little different. The first few weeks of combat, and once you get settled into it, what goes through your mind? Because I don't know anybody that wasn't scared to death for the first few weeks, if not months, until you became accustomed to what was going to go on. it's pretty hard to fall asleep the first couple of nights when you think you could die any minute. Well, I saw a lot of people doing things they would never consider possible. And that's one thing about the military and about combat, that you'll find that you have reserves of energy and stamina that you never thought you had. And as you get older and you go through life, it's hard to believe, but this combat experience helps you sort through a lot of the BS. After that, we transferred up to Camp Eagle and I Corps up on the North Vietnamese border to assault the Ho Chi Minh Trail in Laos. That was January, February, and March of 1971. And out of 600 helicopters, I think 500 were shot down or destroyed. So we didn't win that one. But our unit did receive some presidential citations for assaulting the Ho Chi Minh Trail, things like that. And because the whole idea behind that mission was to sever the Ho Chi Minh Trail, which was supplying supplies and men to South Vietnam.
How did it make you feel coming back and knowing that everybody's mad at you for going to war? Like, how did you cope with that?
A couple suicide attempts. Lots of alcohol. That's how I coped with it, and that's how most Vietnam veterans coped with it.
Happy to be home and know that you're safe?
No, I didn't feel safe. As soon as I came back from Vietnam, they took my best friend away from me that I had every day, 24 hours a day, an M60 machine gun. And now I have all these people coming at me with bad words and actions, and I don't have anything to defend myself.
Did you learn any important lessons that you still use today?
Yes. And I think the biggest lesson that I learned is my government will lie to me, it'll lie to you, it'll lie to everybody. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Sometimes I guess it's justified. It's not with me. And killing, you know, it's justified, I guess, in war, but you gotta live with it. And it's tough to do. Well, I just think this is I want to compliment you ladies for what you're doing here. I think this is great. I think you're promoting patriotism and all kinds of good stuff. And you know, make lines of communication where there have been then,
yeah,
which is very important. And I've already discussed this with my BFW back in Garberville, and I said thank you very much from all the members there too.
That was William Womack. Caitlin, what insights did you gain by listening to William speak?
William taught me a lot about respect. I didn't have a lot of respect. Well, it's not that I didn't have respect for the veterans. It's that I didn't know how they were treated. But listening to William's story made me realize that they were never told thank you. He's never, ever heard those words in his life. He's heard words of hate and regret, but he's never heard the words thank you, and he's never had any respect. And it was important for me to personally say thank you. And like, I don't get why people don't say thank you. He had his reasons for going into war, and it was a time that it was needed. It's not his fault for what the government was telling him to do. He was just doing what he was asked. And so I don't get why other people, like, don't understand that. It's their life, and they have their reasons to do things, and they do it for them, not for everybody around them.
Has that made you appreciate a lot more the, like, Army and Navy that's fighting for us right now?
Yeah, it's made me appreciate a lot more and realize what they're really doing.
But do you actually know what they're really doing, because the government does mask their events with lies?
I don't know, like, what they're doing, but I know that they're doing what they're told to do, and that's all that they can do. That's all that they can help themselves to do.
Right. They have no choice, so we should respect it.
Yeah.
Did the veterans make you think that people your age are the ones fighting in the wars? Is that fair?
I'm sorry, can you... I'm sorry, will you ask that again?
Yeah. Did the veterans make you think that people our age are the ones fighting in the wars?
Like, did they... Did we understand that they were our age when they were fighting?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. When I was interviewing Tom Evans, he stated that, or he asked us, can you imagine what it would be like seeing people die in front of your eyes and have nothing, you can't do anything about it? And when he asked me that, Shayna and I just sat there and we didn't have anything to say because we've never gone through that. And I can't imagine ever having to go through that. Being 18 and having to see someone die or taking the life of another person would ruin me.
The emotional stress that it has.
Right. I would probably cope with it the same way that Caitlin's veteran did because that's scary. I'm not sure how anyone could actually live through that experience and be sane.
And, like, Caitlin, do you think it's fair that the younger generations are leaving for war and the older people who have lived more and had longer lives are the ones that probably aren't risking their lives?
Everybody has a time that they are needed, and if the government or whoever needs the younger people, if they need those people, then I think that it's fair for them to serve. But people with more experience might be better adjusted, but I don't know, it could go both ways.
Yeah.
When I was interviewing Tom Evans, he had told me that if they were drafting men and women into the war that were over the age 50 and they took nobody else, there would be no war. And they said that, or he said that they take the younger people in the world because at age 18 through 25, that's when you have your strongest sex drive. And that is the strongest hormone that you possess. So they take that sex drive and they twist it and convert it into a killing drive. And that's what the government does. And that's really scary. They're smart. That's the scariest part.
We will open the phone lines now for about 10 minutes. We are in the Willett studio and our number is 707-456-9991. Please let us know how these interviews affected you. If you are a veteran or a family member of a veteran, would you like to hear what you would, we would like to hear what you think is important to remember about your service. If you are speaking to young people, what advice or insights would you share? Our studio phone number is 707-456-9991. When you call, please be ready to turn down your radio or we'll get a very confusing echo. The number is 456-9991. Please call in and be part of this discussion about veterans. We'd really like to hear from you. What other kinds of things did you guys take from your veterans? Like, was it hard to listen to them at some point?
Caitlin, go ahead.
It was hard for me to hear William say that he had two suicide attempts. Like, that was really hard for me to, like, hear. And just to see him sitting in front of me, like, made me respect him and made me, like, proud to be interviewing him because, I don't know, I had the chance to do that.
Caller, you're on the air.
I'm so touched by this show. Thank you very much. It's wonderful to have younger people getting it and sharing this. You're just doing a beautiful job. I really appreciate it. My father's twin brother was a CIA agent, and he was an assassin. And I remember him. They were identical twins. And I remember the brother. He was a poet and a beautiful human being when I was a little boy. But I remember him getting his eyes very kind of closed and his mouth got tight and he got kind of a tension below. His whole body got a little bit pulpy. And it was so painful to watch what happened to him. And my father was also a veteran and had gone through war. And the hardening and the pain, and mainly it was these two wonderful men, my dad and his twin brother, they had a weight around them, like carrying secrets that they couldn't tell anybody. And it was so, the pain, you could almost feel, you could touch it, of holding those secrets so tight. So anyway, you're letting the secret out by having these kind of interviews, and I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard because even for him, he was probably, the caller was probably young when this happened, and it, even the stress it had on him was probably hard for someone his age.
And if this caller's father and his brother are listening, we personally would like to say thank you for the deeds that you have done for us.
Caller, you're on the air.
Yeah. You know, some of your ideas fill me with a lot of sadness and distress. I think we need to include peace studies in our high schools because young people don't seem to have a clue what a criminal enterprise war is, and that it is never fought for the reasons stated, the phony baloney patriotism, and look what Nazi Germany did when they mobilized the majority of the population for persecution. And now the Israelis are doing the same thing to the Palestinians, the U.S., to the Afghanis. And when you find out what is actually going on, war is a criminal business. And yet, on the underside, the other side of war, we run this vast prison system. Young people doing 10 and 20 years in some states for growing an herb, and nonviolent crime, something like 85% of the people locked up. Very small percentage are truly, truly dangerous to society. And what's the military backing? The military is abroad in the Middle East right now for the corporations, for oil, for trade routes, for competition with China and Russia over trade. I mean, this is something that I think is just shocking and appalling, that our young people aren't able to put war in the context of accurate history. And I don't mean a lot of the pap that's taught in the system.
Right. And caller, you mentioned that you think it would be better if peace was introduced in education.
Peace studies. Yeah, you can get a degree today. You can get an advanced degree in peace studies.
And
they understand the economics and the politics. You look into, I mean, historically, of war after war after war, and you find that it's all lies and manipulations and money and greed. I mean, the war industry, one of the reasons we're in this huge depression is that the U.S. isn't manufacturing anything anymore but weapons and war. That's what we do.
Yes.
And we're destroying the planet in the process.
I completely agree with you. And I would just like to say that having the opportunity to do this Veterans History Project is, I think it is a way of teaching students about peace and letting them inside to know what the fighters went through, and hearing them say straight off that the government lies. That's really
right.
Strong.
That's right. And there's nothing romantic about war. It is hell out there.
Yes, it is.
I had a friend who just died from cancer from the Agent Orange.
Oh, my condolences.
He came back with all kinds of decorations and blah, blah, blah. You know, he threw his decorations away. He didn't want his silver stars and his bronze and all those stars. And he threw it all away.
Right. And thank you so much for calling in. We loved hearing your opinion.
Thank you. Okay. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Caller, you're on the air.
Thank you very much. Thank you for a really touching show. I was touched by their stories, and I'm very glad you did this. I'm a Vietnam vet, and I found it very useful, that much of it. So, thanks for that. If you want to know what I took away from my experience with it.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
As simply as I could put it, the country was divided. There were camps on either side of the issue. And that's why the friction and the turmoil when we returned. And that's you know, all very understandable. But the takeaway now is that the country is still divided. And we saw it when Bush was elected, you know, the popular vote. of the country, and it tells you where you live. You know, some people think the country should act like a superpower, and even more, the more intervention, say, or domination approach to things, and others look for getting along in the world and a more sustainable world. And I, you know, we can think simplistically about it, but I'm just saying that it isn't exactly red states and blue states.
Right.
It's states of mind.
Yes, I agree. And personally, I would like to say thank you for fighting for us.
I would say one other thing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the callers, I would say, was talking about what they did. And what we all did is a matter of karma, in my mind. Whether or not people acknowledge karma, they had an effect. By participating, we had an effect. And that's something that we live with. And, you know, we live with the consequences of our actions. So I don't think it's right to say that we weren't responsible because we were in a pecking order, that we have to own, always own, responsibility for our actions. I think that's what I also take away from that experience.
Awesome. That's an amazing theory.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. I've heard 60-minute programs that weren't as compelling and as good as what I've heard today, and I think that you guys really got it in your interviews with the veterans. I think that the most compelling aspect was that you realized that the government lied, that they went in to defend their country and then were sent off on some mission for corporate interests. In Vietnam, a lot of it was expanding weapons testing and weaponry and arms sales for major corporations, all the way from actual ballistics and ammunition to aircraft and ships, etc. I was in the Air Force at the end of the Vietnam War, and I would not have gone in except the mission at the time that I was in was to rescue and recover people and basically property from Vietnam and get people over here to reestablish them in trying to salvage some semblance of having a supposedly decent life here in America. Otherwise, I would have been a CO, which would be a conscientious objector, because I would not have participated in shooting or killing. I was thrown out of the Air Force, honorably discharged, but thrown out of the Air Force for the convenience of the government, because the government was having people work too long around depleted uranium counterbalance weights on C-141 aircraft, which the updated version of that is the C-17 right now, which carries cargo. And what basically, in a nutshell, happened was Congress investigated it. The Air Force didn't like it, and they threw me out, saying that I wasn't able to adapt to military life, even though I'd been in for 3 years. So go figure. But it was an honorable discharge, because I had gone through the government, through a congresswoman, Shirley Pettis, to have this investigated. People like Bradley Manning are heroes. He didn't go through the government. He released it to WikiLeaks, but he saw the lies, and he knew what was being told in the media, and he saw what they were actually doing, and he tried to reveal it to us. And for that, he's being tortured, first in back east in Virginia, and now he's in Fort Leavenworth.
Caller.
Yes.
I would just like to say that I agree completely with what you're saying, and the fact that WikiLeaks does exist. I've read up on it, and I thought that the fact that he released that information was amazing. So thank you for stating that on the radio.
Yes, and thank you all for doing what you're doing. I mean this sincerely. What you did this in 20 minutes was the best journalism, and better than what I've heard on 60 Minutes in the hour that they do on these very topics, because they have to satisfy their advertisers, who very often are the same people who are making the weapons like GE, etc., and the nuclear power industry for power and weapons.
Right.
So thank you so much. This is the best Memorial Day program I've ever heard, even though it's not on Memorial Day. I hope you have wonderful careers in journalism or whatever your pursuits are. And thank you for realizing that the people really wanted to defend their countries were lied to, misled, and are running around with limbless or half-dead from the poisons like Agent Orange.
Yes.
Scourging through their bodies, which get passed on to future generations.
Right.
Or degenerations. And bless you all for what you're doing. I really do think that what you've done is a peace education.
Thank you so much.
Previous callers, and bless you all. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Caller,
you're on the air.
I just about support and reiterate everything that's been said on this show. And it's really, really inspiring. And so a few thoughts that came up, and also whoever your teacher is who's helping you field the calls is also an excellent teacher, and you're learning well. So one of the first things I thought about was about me was, it's being thankful. Because, yes, I am thankful, and I would like to express it, but I guess I get choked up and don't because I couldn't just express thanks. And not knowing what they're going through, but knowing trauma, I wouldn't want to trigger. You know, I wouldn't know how to just say thank you, and I wouldn't want to say anything more.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought about that. And then when they were talking about the age, I thought that, too, was very relevant. And I think, you know, if you had to be at least 35, then you would actually have to be developing skills for a while in your adult life. And many people, I mean, like athletes and whatnot, are still very physically capable, even more so because they've maybe developed more, you know, not just strength, but, you know, whatever. Anyway, and so I think 35 would be a good minimum age. And then, well, the other thing that I think about a lot is because the hardest thing about knowing about atrocities and horrible violence and whatnot is feeling that you can't do anything about it. Because if you can respond to the suffering or the serious traumatic problems that you see, then you help and you can feel okay. You know what I mean? You can be strengthened instead of torn down by it.
Yeah.
And I think our media is overwhelming. But what occurred to me is that these very men from that age group, because it's my same age group, and so I've, spent time with veterans. Anyway, and maybe now we're getting to be at the age of elderhood, that, because the other thing that strikes me is I always want to say, bring our troops home. Because we need you here.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty to do here. And it makes me think, too, that if we were taking care of what needs to be taken care of here, that needs to be stood up against or to in a very strong way.
I would just like to reflect on something that you said earlier.
Yeah.
You had spoken about how you are skittish to say thank you to our vets because you're scared that it'll open up a bad memory to them. And I think that...
Well, to go beyond that.
Right. And I think that majority of people feel the same way as you, and that's why they don't get said, they don't get thanked.
And how can we get through this, you know?
Right. And I think you just have to overcome that fear because they need to hear thank you. They need to hear that they are appreciated.
Yes. And they can. And see, what I'm hearing from these conversations is that they are, just being said thank you to opens up, you know, how they feel about it, where they can receive it. And yet, you know, the things that they don't want to be thanked
right.
about can start coming out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking that veterans, that these veterans would be the perfect people to put together a program to help in the community, you know, because to actually to start dealing with these young men with all of this sexual hormones, this,
mm-hmm.
this energy that, you know, the false powers that be are absconding with to much detriment, and make them, you know, community activists to improve our communities. And anyway, yeah, I'm very inspired by that, because then these people can use some of their skills and wisdom that they've carried through.
Mm-hmm. And I would just like to say thank you so much for calling in and giving us your opinion. We
yes.
really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
There will be time at the end of the show for more calls, but for now we are going to go on to the second topic.
When I was 9 years old, I closed it when I was 18. I gave them every penny that I had saved, and they gave my blood and my urine a number. And now I'm sitting in this waiting room, playing with the toys. And I am here to exercise my freedom of choice. I passed their handheld signs, I went through their picket lines. They gathered when they saw me coming, they shouted when they saw me cross. I said, why don't you go home, just leave me alone. I'm just another woman lost. You are like fish in the water who don't know that they are wet. As far as I can tell, the world isn't perfect yet. Bored eyes were obscene on his denim thighs, a magazine. I wish he'd never come here with me. In fact, I wish he'd never come near me. I wish his shoulder wasn't touching mine. I am growing older, waiting in this line. But some of life's best lessons I learn at the worst times. And under the fierce fluorescent, she offered her hand for me to hold. She offered stability and calm, and I was crushing her palm through the pinch pull, wincing. Oh, my smile unconvincing on that sterile battlefield that sees only casualties, never heroes. My heart hit absolute zero. And Lucille, your voice still sounds in me. Yeah, mine was a relatively easy tragedy. The profile of our country looks a little less hard-nosed. But you know that picket line persisted, and that clinic's since been closed. They keep pounding their fists on reality, hoping it will break. But you know, I don't think there's one of them that leads a life free of mistakes. of choice. No, you can't make me sacrifice my freedom of choice. No, you can't make us sacrifice our freedom of choice.
Alright, hello again, everyone. We're going to move to the second topic on today's Youth Speak Out. I am Paige, along with
Caitlin
and Mitzi.
We are students at Laytonville High School. Our second topic today is about the elimination of the family planning program in Mendocino County. Last Tuesday was the final day that Mendocino County provided funding for family planning services. HIV screening, pregnancy tests, education and counseling, the testing and treatment for sexually transmitted infections are among the services that the county no longer provides. This health department program had been in operation for more than 20 years, with the majority of funds coming from the state of California and the federal government. Family planning provided services for more than 5,000 visits per year. Mendocino County has a number of community clinics, including Long Valley Community Clinic in Laytonville, Little Lake Health Center in Willits, Anderson Valley Health Center, Mendocino Coast Clinics, Mendocino Community Health Clinic in Ukiah, Potter Valley Community Health Center, and Redwood Coast Medical Services. These clinics offer family planning services, including Family Pact. Family Pact is a program that provides no-cost family planning services to low-income men and women, including teens. Family Pact can help prevent an unplanned pregnancy and help protect reproductive health. They can provide information about birth control methods and give the education, counseling, and treatments that one might need. Women, men, and teens able to become pregnant or cause a pregnancy can get Family Pact services if they are low-income California residents. Anyone needing these support could contact any of the named health clinics and make an appointment to find out about eligibility. Planned Parenthood will be opening an office in Ukiah in July and possibly one later in Willits. At the moment, one could travel to Clear Lake or Santa Rosa for their needs. In the past few years, most of the news on the teen pregnancy front has been positive. The U.S. teen birth rate declined 6% in 2009, the most recent year for which data is available, and is now a low record. Despite this progress, it is still the case that 3 in 10 girls get pregnant by age 20. This suggests that services and education could help teens postpone their families until they are older, through school and in stable, committed relationships. In this section of the show, we will discuss how the elimination of family planning services may affect the teenagers in our community. The anonymity of going to a specified clinic for these services was an advantage, since the chance of seeing someone familiar at the local clinic is high in our rural facilities. Teenagers who are not informing their parents about their choices might not be comfortable with asking questions or getting services from a family doctor. The family planning provided educational events at some schools. Most of the schools we are aware of have very little sex education in the curriculum. Maybe this lack of education explains the statistics that there are 19 million new sexually transmitted infections each year, almost half of them among 15 through 24-year-olds, and 1 in 4 sexually active adolescents has an infection. So we will discuss the end of the family planning program in Mendocino County and sex education for about 15 minutes. Then we will open the phone lines for your information, questions, and insights. I suggested the topic, so I will start. Personally, I believe that the fact that they are eliminating family planning, I think it's a terrible thing, because I was doing some research the other day and I found that the average average age for young women to lose their virginity these days is 11 and 12. And that is a scary number to be having sex and not be educated about what can come from it, that you can get pregnant, and that there are infections you can get that are incurable and may cause you to die. So the fact that they are eliminating the education program is, it's very scary. And I think that we should be educating children more about sex and the responsibilities that it comes with at a younger age. Do you two have anything to say about it?
I agree that kids need to be educated younger. Parents don't want to talk about sex with their kids. Parents don't want to bring it up. They want to keep their kids isolated and so-called protect them. But if they don't have the education and they try new things and like they're not educated about it, then it's not protecting them at all.
And also when we were talking earlier, someone mentioned that a lot of this has to, media has, is like, it's everything can be blamed on media because parents aren't wanting to talk about it, but then children are able to watch PG-13 movies that a lot of times now have sex, and they're seeing it at different, they're seeing it at places where they're not getting the right information, and it's not healthy.
Like you said about the media, I'm not sure if any of you listeners has heard of the show 16 and Pregnant or the movie Juno, but both of those programs, if you actually watch and pay attention to what's going on, the media makes pregnancy at a young age seem cool, and you'll get a lot of attention from it. And, I mean, you don't have to go to school because there's a baby inside of you, but if you have to look at the big picture, being pregnant at a young age is not cool, and you're not going to benefit from it. You have to look at the big picture and see that you have a whole life in front of you, and if you're being sexually active at ages 11 and 12, then you're not thinking about what's ahead. You're thinking about what's in the moment. And it's not a bad thing to live in the moment, but you have to think about your future and act on what's best and what's going to make your future the best for you.
And, like, these reality shows, like Teen Mom and 16 and Pregnant, are showing, like, a select few teenagers that somehow were, I don't know how they're chosen, but are lucky enough to get on the show. And they have everything, like, planned out for them. They definitely won't run out of money, and those TV shows don't show the hard part of being a teenager and being pregnant.
Right, and they're getting paid to be pregnant. So, of course, it's going to look cool. And then after 16 and Pregnant, it goes to Teen Moms, which shows the next episode of their life. And they all have money. Some of them have boob jobs. They live in mansions and drive nice cars. And they make it seem that if you become pregnant and you can get on TV, then you're going to be rich and famous. And that's not how it goes. It's just a select few that happens to. And because the media has such a large influence on young adults these days, they want to have sex. And because they are having sex and there's not much that we can do about it because they're going to do what they want, they need to be educated. And if one of them does become pregnant or need the Plan B pill, they're not going to want to tell their parents that they need to get an abortion or whatnot. They want to go somewhere that's safe, somewhere where they feel comfortable in their own skin and saying, hey, I need help, and not having the pressure of seeing your friend in the clinic and then them telling your parents and you getting in trouble. So I think that the elimination of family planning is a bad idea. Would anybody like to call in and say anything on the topic that we are talking about and discussing? If so, feel free.
The number is 456-9991.
Exactly. We are opening the lines now for 10 minutes. We are in the Willett studio, and our number again is 707-456-9991. We would really like to hear your comments about family planning services available in our community. Are there enough providers? If you are a teen or if you were a teen, would you feel comfortable going to a clinic and for information on birth control or sexually transmitted infections? Are you glad that Family Planning Parenthood will be covering for some of those losses occurred by the end of the family planning program? If so, we would really like to hear any questions or concerns that you have. Please call in.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, I am calling. I'm part of the staff of the closed down family planning clinic. And yes, a lot of the staff is going over to Planned Parenthood, which will be opening in Ukiah in August. And we will make it every effort that we can to get up to Willits as soon as possible because we know the need. The one thing that you were talking about, well, there were a few things. You guys are doing a lot of great research, but the alternative to not providing providing birth control to teenagers is unwanted pregnancy. And statistics from Child Protective Services in this county is amazing. It's real sad. A huge number of teenage parents can't raise kids, and so the Child Protective Services steps in, and that's your alternative if you don't want to use birth control, and that's terrible. The other thing I want to say is you mentioned the Plan B pill. The Plan B pill is also known as the morning after pill, and that's good for taking up to 5 days after having unprotected sex. That's still available to anyone over 18. And if you have the Family Pact card, anyone under 18 can get it at Meyer's Apothecary in Ukiah without a prescription, without money. So that's what I wanted to say. We're continuing to try to provide services. Planned Parenthood will be in. And all the other clinics you mentioned are out there, so take advantage of them.
Thank you so much for calling in and educating us on that particular topic.
All right. Bye-bye.
Caller, you're on the air.
This topic is directly related to your first topic in that the war machine, the three wars going on, Libya, Afghanistan, Iraq, are stealing your future. Here's an example. Your education and infrastructure so you can get around and travel. I really hope that you all can get your first portion and this portion in front of every congressman, every government official in this country so that they can hear the brilliant people that are coming up behind them that really have it together enough to understand fully what's going on. You all amaze me. I wish you the best, and I hope that with your persistence and your excellent journalism, you'll be able to expose the truth and get back what's been stolen and was being stolen as we speak from you.
Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you
for what you do.
Caller, you're on the air.
Yeah. My name is Larry Hatchett, and I was just coming back from seeing my kids up in Eureka and caught your guys' station. I just wanted to say you're doing a great job. And I'm see if you guys got anything on the internet when I get back to the house. I'd like to look you guys up.
Oh,
Planned Parenthood and sex education in schools and stuff like that. Other programs are very important. I'm from a different generation, and we had there was no pressure on Planned Parenthood like there is nowadays to shut them down. And a lot of it's political, I think. And I just want to say it's very important. I use the services. I got a young lady pregnant, and we use the services. And had they been forced to tell her parents, it would have been disastrous. And not saying that, you know, it's a good thing to have to abort a child, but I definitely think it should be a choice that boils down to the woman to make.
I agree with that. And thank you so much for calling in. And if you would like to go online and look us up, our website is www.youthspeaksout.net.
That's all for this month's edition of Youth Speaks Out. Your hosts today have been me, Caitlin Whiteley,
Paige Polson,
and Mitzi Pearson. Thanks to all of our callers. One of the purposes of this show is to involve the community in dialogue, so your call-ins are important to us. We're happy to have been able to broadcast from the Willits studio. Youth Speaks Out is produced in cooperation with the Safe Schools, Healthy Students, and Bronco Project, Building Resiliency. Opportunities for the North County for more information about the Bronco Project. Please call Pat Stanborn at 459-5314 or email at pstanborn@mcoe.us. Youth Speaks Out is produced and directed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached at mail P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California 95490. Or through the website www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can find more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of the show, and listen to many hours of previous programs in streaming audio.
The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KZYX. They are the views of those who express them. Our next show will be on the first Saturday of July, the 5th at 3 p.m. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in July.